Good morning. I'm Leslie Thatcher. 8:06 on this Monday. It's April 15th. We've got 32 degrees currently here in Old Town Park City and kind of socked in with kind of soggy conditions. On the phone with us from the ABC Forecast Center, meteorologist Thomas Giboy. Good morning.
Morning, Leslie. Happy Monday to you. It's just what a difference a day or two makes, because over the weekend we were just treated to some lovely spring weather. But today we got a front that's moving across the state, and as we go through today, we'll be looking at a good chance for showers more or less continuing from this morning through the afternoon to this evening. It's going to be one of those situations where at any point today there's a good chance that wet weather will find you, but that's by no means a guarantee saying that it's going to happen all day. So at any point today, just be prepared, keep your eyes to the sky, and also don't be surprised if you hear a few rumbles of thunder. With the temperature right around freezing in Park City right now, anything that's going to fall will mainly be in the form of snow. But as we go into this afternoon, with a daytime high that'll come in right around 40 degrees, we'll be looking at a chance of seeing rain and snow. However, I think for Park City, we stay mainly snow while down in Heber, with a daytime high climbing into the middle 40s. It's a better chance that we kind of see that rain and snow mix. And there is going to be at least the potential that we could see some accumulation in Park City, maybe on the magnitude of 1 to 3 inches. And I think a lot of that could be driven just by how heavy sometimes the precipitation could be, because if we get heavy times of precipitation, could drag down the snow levels a little bit more, and then we could start to see those accumulations. So that's just another thing to be mindful of as we go through today. We'll hold on to a pretty good chance for rain and snow showers into this evening, but the chance for wet weather will gradually begin to diminish as we go from the evening hours into the overnight, and then by tomorrow morning, just a slight chance for maybe a lingering shower here or there, with the overnight lows dropping back into the 30s. And then throughout the day on our Tuesday, our skies should become increasingly sunny. And by tomorrow, we should be relatively close to where we should be for this time of year. So the average high in Park City, right around 50 degrees, will be in the upper 40s for tomorrow, as we mainly check in with a mix of sun and clouds tomorrow afternoon. Partly cloudy skies on Tuesday night, with the overnight low dropping around freezing. Then on Wednesday, a weak front is going to move in from the northwest. It's not going to really bring much in the way of any cooler air, but there will be at least a slight chance for a few showers in the Wasatch back on Wednesday, roughly a 1 in 5 or 20% chance. If we see it in the morning, good chance that we see snow. If we see it in the afternoon, that wet weather, then there's a chance that we could see rain and snow at that daytime high, once again coming in at 49 degrees. We'll drop into the upper 20s on Wednesday night, and then as we move from the second half of this week into and through this upcoming weekend, I think that we're going to get treated to some pretty nice spring weather. On Thursday, it's mostly sunny with a daytime high near 50 degrees. And then for our Friday, Saturday, and Sunday, each day will be a little bit warmer than the last. Overnight lows will continue to be mainly in the mid to upper 30s during that stretch, but we'll be at 53 on Friday, 57 on Saturday, and 60 degrees on Sunday. And what's more is that from Friday through this weekend, there will be a slight chance for showers, but we could be looking at mainly pop-up showers and maybe a few thunderstorms during the afternoon hours. So we're kind of moving more towards warm season kind of weather by the time we get into the end of this week, after dealing with some kind of winter-like weather today, Leslie.
Okay. Hey, Thomas, thank you.
You're welcome.
And again, the regular avalanche forecasts have ended. However, Utah Avalanche Center will continue posting observations and avalanches on their website at utahavalanchecenter.org. So if you do get out into the backcountry and do see anything that everybody else should know about, go ahead and submit them to their website. Of course, during the spring, typically three different avalanche problems: one, wet snow, new snow, or wind drifted snow. So be careful if you're headed out into the backcountry, as always. Well, stay tuned. Coming up on the local news hour this morning, I'll be checking in with Park City Fire District Marshal Mike Owens. Later on, Park City Ski and Snowboards Christy Hind and Youth Development Director Ryan Devine with a season recap and a look ahead at some of the summer programming they're offering. And finally, Dana Jones, the executive director of the Snohomish Basin Special Recreation District, has a monthly update, including an update on the e-bike survey. Well, taking a look at some local news now, Olympic officials wrapped up their visit to Utah on Saturday. KPCW's Christine Weller reports the Olympic officials want to continue their dialogue with Utah.
The International Olympic Committee's Future Host Commission toured proposed Olympic venues as they consider Utah for the 2034 Winter Games. During their four-day trip, the commission visited the Rice-Eccles Stadium, the Utah Olympic Park and Ski Resorts in Park City, Soldier Hollow in Midway, and Snow Basin and the Utah Olympic Oval. The commission also participated in a community forum, rode on a tracks train, and spoke with local athletes. Utah's bid committee president, Fraser Bullock, said the commission told the team they undersold the venues in their bid for the 2034 games. Commission chair Carl Stoss said all the venues were well maintained, and the commission was impressed there wasn't much work to be done.
all were clearly still very much in demand for both competitive and community use. And we saw it in the past 4 days, from small children up to elite athletes. We saw all of them in your venues.
Stoss said something special about having an Olympics in Utah is all the venues are within an hour of downtown Salt Lake City. Nowhere else in the world is this the case. Further, Stoss said the Olympic Village in Salt Lake can host all competing athletes. This is important as athletes from all over the world can be in one place, unified. However, what the commission loved even more than the venues were the people. Jacqueline Barrett, IOC Future Olympic Games Hosts Director, said she was surprised everyone the commission met, including young and old athletes, kids with their families, and student athletes at the University of Utah, all had a passion for the games.
Well, I was here in 2002 personally, but to see that passion still alive and so prevalent today absolutely everywhere was fantastic to see.
The commission also really liked seeing Utah's efforts to promote sports with young people after the 2002 Olympics. The Youth Sports Alliance, which helps bring children to different winter sports, is one of the best examples as it was created because of the 2002 Games. Olympic Games Executive Director Christoph Duby said sports are important to promote in young people because not only are they good for health, but they promote values like respect.
When you consider the state of the world today, the tensions all around the globe, sport matters because it is based on values. In Paris and in 2034, in the village up there in the university, you have every country, respective of the passport, the religion, the race, or the political system. This is what we have to teach through sport, respect for anyone and everything.
Stoss said Utah took a new approach this time with bidding for the games and will be a role model for future hosts. He hopes other countries and states across the U.S. will learn from Utah and start to build programs to promote sports for kids and continue using Olympic venues. Stoss said even if Utah doesn't get the 2034 games, the Youth Sports Alliance is something he wants to see in other areas. Stoss said Utah's bid for the 2034 games started with an open dialogue between partners, and the dialogue will continue so Utah and the International Olympic Committee can learn from each other. The Future Host Commission will write a report on their visit to Utah for the IOC to consider before voting on a host for the 2034 Games. The IOC will announce its decision on July 24th ahead of the Summer Games in Paris. Christine Weller, KPCW News.
In the studio now with an update from Park City Fire District, I have Fire Marshal Mike Owens. Good morning, Mike.
Good morning.
So it's that time of year again. Registration, is it open for the wood chipping program?
It most certainly is. I opened it up this morning, and we already have a couple on there. So, you know, people were waiting for that, and they knew that it was coming today, and they've already jumped on there.
Okay, so you didn't get to all of the homes last year. Do you kind of start where you ended up, or do people need to resubmit?
So we only had 3 piles that did not get processed last year, and that was because of construction on the roads. The roads were torn up, and we couldn't get our chipping crews down there. Otherwise, everyone else got handled. So our chippers don't leave until the process is done, and those we just couldn't get to.
Okay, so what are the do's and don'ts for those who are interested in that?
You know, there's 2 big things. The first one is they have to register. We're not going to chip a pile that's not registered. There's a lot of local companies that do the same thing that we do. When someone wants their piles done faster than what we're able to do, they're welcome to hire a landscaping company, and we don't want to take any business from them. So if the pile's not registered, we're not going to chip it. Aside from that, there are a few rules on our website that you have to follow. Mostly we can't do gigantic piles. We limit it to 8 feet wide by 8 feet long by 6 feet tall, which is still that's a lot of wood. If you have more wood than that, then it's okay. Register a second pile, and when we do another lap around the district, we'll catch you the second time. Each pile has to be registered separately though. The piles have to be clean, no dirt, no root bulbs or anything like that. That chews up our chipping machine and makes it so it doesn't work. No wires, no construction waste, just the same general things. What we're really looking for is to help people get rid of some of that yard waste that they have.
Yeah, so what can be chipped? I mean, anything that's growing in the garden?
Pretty much. There's, you know, we're not going to take our shovels out there and shovel your grass clippings in there. But anything that comes out in a stick form, whether it's bushes or whether it's tree branches, There, Leslie, I'm going to tell you this. There is a certain satisfaction that comes from throwing an aspen tree in there. it smells wonderful, and the chips come out clean, and the chips go to a good use as well. But yeah, we can take everything from trees to branches. We do limit it at 6-inch logs. We don't want anything bigger than that. And also keep in mind that the piles can't be built by a machine. Our chippers come by and they take these things apart by hand. When the piles are built by a machine, they just get too tangled and they can't pull them apart.
Okay. So what do you do with the chips, or can they stay on site so that somebody could use them for their own landscaping purposes?
Staying on site doesn't work very well because our chipping machine is not detailed in where it throws the chips. It makes a pretty big mess. So we can't leave your chips on site. If people do want chips, we keep a pile in front of our Station 33 at 736 West Bittner Road. They're welcome to come by and take as many of those as they want. If they want a bunch of them, they come by with a trailer and a little skid steer. You can load them up, and when that pile's gone, we'll bring another pile in. Other than that, the chips go to just local places around here that need chips for composting. We do partner with Bill White. He's been very generous in taking the chips that we've had over the past couple years, and we very much appreciate that because there's a lot of chips that are generated out there.
Yeah, so is this something different than what somebody would throw on their landscaping to kind of create that mulch?
You can use it for landscaping. It's a lot of people will do that, but generally you don't want to use it right in your front yard. The chips come from different sources. Sometimes, like I said, we'll take bushes and we'll take tree branches. The aspen chips come out really nice. The pine and fir trees come out a little less nice. The bushes around your house come out not so nice. But, you know, if a lot of people use them in horse stalls and that sort of thing.
All right. Also offering wildfire home assessment. Tell us about these.
These are pretty good. We've been doing this program for several years. What we'll do is we'll come by your house, and if you have if it's a multifamily house, we can do that as well. But it's generally geared towards single-family residences. We do require that there be someone there that can make decisions. So we don't want to just show up and have a renter say, hey, we need to do this and this and this. We want someone who's there to say, we are going to do this. Someone who's a little bit, you know, they're vested in the property. But what we'll do is we'll walk around the outside of your house. We don't go inside. And we look at your house from as close as the house itself all the way out to about 30 to 100 feet, depending on how big your property is. And we'll give you a list of things that you can do specific to your house to help prepare you for wildfire. We'll also sort those things. So, you know, let's say, for example, you have a wood shake shingle roof. We're going to put that at the top of the priority list rather than cutting your trees back. If you don't have a wood shake shingle roof, we don't have to worry about that, and we can look at some of the other things.
Yeah. Are houses even built with wood shingles anymore?
Not anymore. There's still some out there. They're older houses. But they're currently not permitted to be built up here within Park City Municipal and the Park City Fire District area.
Yeah, so do insurance companies now require these kind of assessments before they offer insurance to some of those homes in those wildland urban interface areas?
So what they require is a little bit different than what we do. They require an actual inspection where someone comes through and they say, you know, do you meet this requirement, yes or no? That's not what we do. And we don't work with insurance companies. We're not certified. We're not qualified to do those inspections. These are solely for the homeowner to know what they can do to prepare their home for a wildfire.
Okay, so it's prevention, safety.
That's exactly what it is.
Yeah. What do we know about homeowners? Are they still losing their insurance in some of these wildland urban interface areas?
So yes is the short answer to that question. The long answer is it seems to have slowed down. So I'm getting less and less calls. When we had the fire up in Parley's, it took about 3 weeks before I got the first notification from a homeowner saying, hey, we've dropped our insurance dropped us, what can we do? And then it just from there it just exploded into a big giant ball of fire, really. it became we were getting calls, many calls every week. And now it's slowed down to, I'm probably only getting about maybe one or two calls a month now.
Okay. So people either found something else or the insurance companies have maybe backed off?
But it's a combination of both. So the insurance companies have adjusted a little bit, and then the people have found other sources. One of the things that the insurance companies do is not all insurance companies use ISO ratings. There's other rating programs out there, and these other rating programs will look at areas as a whole rather than they'll look at the big picture rather than the smaller picture. And those that are looking at the big picture are seeing our area and they're saying, wow, you have these giant wildfires or you have a lot of risk, and they're not looking at the details of what we're doing. So that's kind of hurt us a little bit, and by us, I mean the community. But I think the insurance company has also adjusted that a little bit. That's kind of the feeling that I'm getting from insurance agents as I talk to them.
Okay. Also looking at summer preparations, what does that entail?
Well, you know, now's a great time to look at your house and see what you have going on. One of the biggest things, the single biggest thing that we find when we're doing these home assessments is the stuff that collects under people's decks and then right around their houses. If you want to protect your home from a wildfire, the easiest thing you can do is a little bit of that cleanup. So take 2 hours on a Saturday, clean out all the dead and dying brush right up next to your house within that first 3 to 5 feet. Make sure you don't have anything that's combustible under your deck. And it's funny, Leslie, that's the big thing that catches most people is that stuff. When we're trying to fight against it, when we're trying to prevent a wildfire from burning down a house, what we want to do is get rid of those places where the embers that blow around can land and catch on fire. So getting rid of that combustible stuff, getting rid of the dead and dying material right around your house makes a big, big difference.
Okay, and then coming out with the snow melting, what do people need to look at?
Exactly, yeah. So, you know, the snow causes damage. When our bushes get piled or get buried under the snow, things break. And it's these little things that catch us. And something that people really need to kind of take notice of and be aware is a lot of communities have community cleanup days. It is a great opportunity to get rid of a lot of that, just the stuff that we've collected over the years. We really encourage people to check with their homeowners associations and see what they have coming up.
Okay. You're also hiring for seasonal equipment operators and laborers. What, these are the folks that are going to be doing the chipping?
These are our chippers, as we call them. We're looking for 3 people, and the only requirement is that you be 18 and have a driver's license and able to work around heavy equipment. It is a loud, dirty, hot job. Personally, I enjoyed doing it. My chief told me I couldn't do it. I had to be in the office. He needed me there instead of out running the chipping machine. But it's physical labor. It's great being outside. And you know you're doing something for the community with it as well.
Okay. All that information is online?
It's right there on our website. You go to our website, www.pcfd.org. Follow the links to employment, and then you just click through there and you'll find that job description and application. Same thing with the chipping. I didn't mention that earlier. If you do want to register for chipping, you just do that right on our front page of our website. There's a big brown box that says wood chipping program. Click on that, fill out the form, and you're good to go.
Okay. Anything else?
You know, I really appreciate all the work that people do during the summer. We live in a beautiful area, and it takes a lot of maintenance to keep up, to keep it safe. Every year I'm astounded by the amount of work that people do to keep our area safe, and I really appreciate that.
Okay. Mike, thanks for coming in.
Thank you.
Mike Owens, again, with the Fire Marshal for Park City Fire District. Well, Wasatch County leaders say they will plan ways to improve sustainability and engage youth if the Olympics come to Utah in 2034. KPCW's Grace Dorfler has more on that.
The Olympics may be a decade away from returning to Utah, but leaders are already talking about how to welcome the world to the Heber Valley. At an interlocal meeting Wednesday night, representatives from around the county discussed steps they want to take if the games return. Heber City Mayor Heidi Franco says the International Olympic Committee will be looking for Utah to meet certain criteria.
One of them is sustainability, everyone, as well as elevating the sport for youth and families. You kind of need to think about that sustainability aspect, because IOC might be looking for that, you know, in every venue.
She says so far, county leaders have spent more time thinking about economic development, tourism, and transportation ahead of a potential games. Heber City Manager Matt Brower named downtown revitalization projects like the Banshell on 200 South as examples of how the city hopes to attract tourists during the Olympics. He says venues like that one can host spectators during competition. If Utah is confirmed as the host of the 2034 Games, Soldier Hall and Nordic Center in Midway will be the venue for the biathlon, cross-country skiing, and Nordic combined competitions. Franco praised improvements to the venue since the 2002 Games.
If any of you haven't been out to see the improvements at Soldier Hall, you should. The building is fantastic. The improvements on the shooting range, right? And the media setup they have there is pretty amazing.
In addition to appealing to the IOC, some leaders emphasized any Olympic planning should also have the county's best interests at the forefront. Here's Wasatch County Councilmember Steve Farrell.
This might be the wrong thing to say, but I think we need to think about citizens of Wasatch County first.
Salt Lake City has been named the preferred host for the 2034 Games, and it's the only official bid. Wasatch County leaders will form an Olympics organizing committee if Salt Lake is awarded the bid on July 24th, Pioneer Day in Utah. Grace Dorfler, KPCW News.
In the studio now with a recap of the winter season and a look ahead to the summer, I have the Executive Director of Park City Ski and Snowboard, Christy Hine, along with Youth Development Director Ryan Devine. Good morning.
Good morning, Leslie.
Morning.
All right. Well, let's start with a season recap. I mean, all wrapped up then in terms of the programs at this point, Christy?
Just about. In terms of programs, yes, we do have a few competitors who are still on the road, but they'll be wrapping up this week. And it has been an explosive and amazing season. I mean, kids all over the country competing internationally and here at home with lots of venues.
Okay. So Park City Ski and Snowboard deals with how many different divisions?
So we have divisions that run across Nordic, Alpine, Freestyle, Free Ski, and Snowboard. And then roughly 1,200 athletes spread across those various divisions. So pretty much everything on skis or on a snowboard happens at Park City Ski and Snowboard.
Okay. You want to talk about some of the achievements then?
Sure. So it looks like, and this is not official yet, but it looks like we will add seven members to national teams this year, and they will join 32 alumni who are currently members of the U.S. national teams here at Park City, or at U.S. Ski and Snowboard. We have a couple who will be rising up from aerials, which is a freestyle discipline, and then some in SkiMo. We have three athletes in SkiMo, ski mountaineering, which for your listeners, if you don't know, will be debuted as an Olympic sport in the 2026 Games in Milan Cortina, and then some ski jumpers. So we're very, very proud. Obviously, that's one of the penultimate things that we do, which is to be a feeder for the U.S. team. But really, we're equally as proud of things that are happening at the base of the program. Ryan will tell you a little bit about how we expanded our base and offered programs to lots of littles.
Yeah, we started a 5 to 6 year old program called the Grom program this year. We did that over at Woodward on Monday nights. We had about 31 5 to 6 year olds out there every Monday. And yeah, it was a pretty great program. We had an all-star coaching staff. It was led by Forrest Carey. Ted Ligety came and helped coach for a lot of the weeks. We had Steve Nyman, Libby Ludlow. So like a lot of former U.S. team members or, you know, Division I NCAA racers on that staff. So it was, they got some good coaching.
Wow. Okay. So that 5 and 6 years old, they were all on alpine skis outside then.
Mm-hmm.
Working.
Correct.
Yeah. Yeah. How many did you have? Any idea?
Yeah, we had 31 in that program.
Wow.
And pretty big wait list too. So a lot of interest in that program.
Okay, and that's kind of something that had been done at like the resort. How is it different from like the farm team or the kindergarten adventure or whatever they offer now?
A lot of these kids are a little too young, I think, still for farm team, and it's not a learn to ski. So the kids have to know how to ski already and have some basic ski skill. So we're not teaching skiing from scratch.
Getting better already.
Yeah.
Okay. Let's see. You also had a bunch of athletes compete in the Junior World Championships.
We did. We had a number of athletes in Junior Worlds, mostly on the freestyle side of the house, aerialists and mogul athletes. And that took place in Valleminco. And that was just about 2 weeks ago. They've just come back about 10 days ago. And the other thing that we did, Leslie, that I think is really worth mentioning is the number of hosted sport events that we held right here in Park City, principally at the Utah Olympic Park with its brand new Spencer F. Eccles Olympic Mountain Center. We've got two big runs over there, one for Alpine and the other for moguls. And we debuted those venues by hosting world-class events right here at home this year. So that's something that really added to our plate, but gave athletes in our club an opportunity to ski and compete on home turf, and very, very challenging turf at that. So we're pretty proud to have brought the Freestyle Junior Nationals to the West Peak Axios run. And then a number of Alpine events were hosted over there as well on that new on the new Alpine venue.
All right. So you have figured out then how to host events on what is a very steep hill.
Yeah. So on the Alpine side, for those of you who haven't been up to the Olympic Park, it's 355 meters of vertical drop. It's a FIS homologated at the NORAM level run for GS and slalom, and a FIS Super G for men and women. And the run spans 80 meters wide. So the majority of the trail gives us 3 to 4 lanes of full GS side by side, which is something that we haven't had in Park City. And all of this training, both on the Alpine side and up on the Moguls Axios run, can be accessed via the new high-speed quad that's got a turnaround of under 5 minutes. So for both training and competing, we're able to get a lot of competitors up there and to train a ton of athletes. I know that our Alpine director and staff and our Mogul director and staff spent a lot of time really getting to know the terrain up there and making sure that it was safe and highly competitive. And I think we had really good results with both starting with the uni races and then running through some of the others.
Okay, well, I'm going to say, I mean, if you can train on the steep stuff, everything else is going to be easy, huh?
Exactly.
That's correct, yeah.
Yeah, we think it does give us a competitive advantage. On the Alpine side, we also train at our very good partner, Park City Mountain, and also at Deer Valley, U14 and above. So these kids have really got access to 3 world-class venues. And then we also utilize Woodward Park City for some of our free ski athletes and snowboarders who spend a lot of their time there. And Park City Mountain will still be a place where you'll see kids out there training every single weekend. They've just stopped, I think, last weekend. Every single weekend, hundreds of kids out there using those amazing hills and trails.
Yeah, I did notice that at Deer Valley this year, off of that Mountain Air Chairlift, that they've designated a run, what, specifically for your Alpine athletes?
Yes, it's the Silver Hill Run, which is just adjacent to Mountaineer, where Ted trains. So it's a really terrific, we've built a little start house at the top, and Deer Valley has been incredibly generous by letting us use that trail, which has been super awesome for our Alpine athletes age U14 and above.
Okay, well, let's... anything from else about winter you wanted to mention, or shall we move on to summer?
I think we should talk about summer. It doesn't look like it today, but it's certainly around the corner.
Did this weekend. But
it did this weekend.
All right, but you do have some summer registration happening now?
Yeah, we opened summer registration for all youth development programs about 2 weeks ago. So we have a wide variety of offerings from week-long mountain bike camps. We have week-long water ramping camps jumping into the Olympic pool at the Utah Olympic Park. We have one of our multi-sport camps, which is like half Nordic jumping, half freestyle, so jumping into the pool. We have summer-long training for our freestyle development athletes who, you know, ski with us year-round. We also run some skateboard camps, too. I don't think registration for those are open yet. That's run through a snowboard program, but it's perfect for that 8 to 12-year-old range. And they travel around, like, Park City and Salt Lake and check out all the different skate parks. So it's a pretty cool program.
Yeah, and that's kind of interesting how you've kind of moved from ski and snowboard then to mountain biking and skateboarding. Is that for previously registered Alpine or ski and snowboard athletes? Or
it
anybody?
Is open to the community. So for mountain biking, at a minimum age is 8 years old, and we go up to like 12, 13 for those, and skate camps kind of similar. But no, they don't have to be members of Park City Ski and Snowboard. They can be community members, or sometimes we get people who, you know, spend like 2-3 weeks in the summer here and, you know, want something for their kids to do.
Okay. And then with these mini and micro ramps, where are those located?
So those are at the pool at the Olympic Park. Last fall, we renovated the mini jump. We cut it in about half, so it's half the height, and it has a much smoother curve to the jump, so it's not going to buck kids as much, and it's going to be a lot smoother to hit, and definitely help with the progression of moving up to the single, and just for those younger kids having a less intimidating jump to go off of.
Okay.
And then
I was going to say, this is where they jump in with their skis and boots,
yep.
Right?
Yeah, correct. Yeah, this is jumping in full alpine gear into the pool. They do wear life jackets so they float. And then we have plans and, you know, really optimistic that will happen this summer is we're planning on building, I guess, a micro ramp, which is a much smaller ramp where the transition is going to be level and at the same level as the pool deck and be no more than, I think, we're looking at 24 inches off the water. So another layer of progressions for kids to kind of build their skills and work up to the bigger jumps more safely and more comfortably for them.
Okay, so this is what Park City Ski and Snowboard's doing, or do you have some help from the UOP?
Yeah, from the UOP for sure.
A lot of help from the UOP.
Yeah, it's a collaboration as we spend a lot of time with our good partner at the UOP. But we really are hopeful that we can increase access to, you know, using the Olympic pool as a tool to increase their air awareness and so forth. It really is something that used to be there years and years ago, and we're hoping to bring it back this year with the help of the UOP.
Okay, I didn't realize it had been taken out. They did that when they redid the pool.
Exactly.
Huh?
Yeah.
Yeah, we had a much smaller mini ramp before the pool rebuild, and so it'd be good to get something similar back.
Okay, anything else you want to mention?
That's it.
I think that's it for us, yeah.
Bring on the spring.
All right, Christy, Ryan, thanks so much.
Thanks for having us.
Well, Utah welcomed the world 22 years ago for its first Winter Olympics. Now the state awaits an IOC decision on a second Olympic Games. Miles Radiman was Park City's planning director back in the late 1980s and remembers when then Park City Mayor Brad Ulch pitched bringing the Games to Utah, an undertaking that would take almost 15 years of planning.
I remember him coming into my office. It must have been 1988, maybe 1987. Said he got a call from people in Salt Lake, and they were talking about bidding again for the Games. Salt Lake had bid before for the Games in the 60s, but never got them.
Salt Lake City won the bid for the 2002 Games in 1995, and he says they had 7 years to prepare.
I think the success of our Games in 2002 was attributable to 50% great planning and 75% incredible luck.
Before 2002, Radiman says that Park City had experience hosting big events like the Sundance Film Festival and World Cup skiing events at then the Park City ski area. In preparation for the Winter Games, he and other Utah officials attended 5 Olympics to learn from other countries. He explained that one of the biggest factors in a successful Games was having community support.
Yeah, we were willing to welcome the world here and act as hosts. That all has to do with hospitality, being hospitable, and making sure that we do welcome people and we make them comfortable and safe.
While Park City had the venues for the game, he says the town's primary role was to host the party.
And the scene is very important, and it includes things like pin trading and bands and celebrations, because really what you're trying to do is you're trying to present an aura of peace and people coming together and striving for the best they can.
He also touched on recent Olympics in comparison to the 2002 Games in Salt Lake City.
We had trash can bands and marching bands of the kids and so forth. It was a real down-home kind of celebration. And I think, unfortunately, in the years since we did the Games, the Olympics kind of lost some of their luster. I think we have a chance now, again, to reinvigorate the Olympic movement about the things that we care about, sustainability, community, hospitality.
The Olympic officials' tour of Utah ended on Saturday. Once again, the IOC will be selecting a host for the 2034 Winter Games on July 24th. In the studio now with an update from the director of the Snidelva Basin Special Recreation District, I have Director Dana Jones. Good morning.
Good morning, Leslie. Thanks for having me.
Yeah, so let's talk a little bit about preparations happening this spring and summer. What you got going on?
Oh my gosh, we were hoping this year we were kind of slow down and kind of catch up, but it doesn't seem that way. We are actually the courts, the tennis and pickleball courts at Trailside are open. I'm not quite sure with this rain, you know, what they look like right now, but they did get the windscreens up there and the nets up. Willow Creek is a little bit behind that. We're hoping for that this week. It kind of depends on what this storm is going to do and what it's going to put down, but we're hoping that we're going to be able to get Willow Creek also open this week. exciting. We are finally getting the shade structures between the tennis and pickleball courts at Willow Creek installed. They did the footings last week, so we're hoping that that'll also be finished this week, so you won't have to stand out in the sun when you're out at Willow Creek playing. And it's going to be busy. The trail crews are out trying to deal with a lot of mud. There's a lot of mud out there right now, but they're out just trying to get everything ready for summer.
Okay. Did you get the run amok back open?
That is actually closed this month.
Okay.
So, it's closed the entire month. We've had, we do have a couple of volunteer days during the closure month. And if you come out and volunteer to help clean up dog poop, you can use run amok even when it's closed. And so we have been getting a tremendous number of people coming out there excited to pick up dog poop, which is always amazing. But they've picked up hundreds of pounds of dog poop so far this month. I know.
It's everywhere.
It's crazy.
Okay. You also have summer program registration underway. What are you guys offering?
You know, we have, we're going to be housing thousands of children this summer, and we've actually added a number of new camps and programs this year. Our registration opened on the 10th, April 10th at 6 a.m., and some of the more popular camps, I know one of them was full in like 2 minutes. So it's very quick, but there are a lot of availabilities that are still remaining on some of our day camps and also on our swimming programs, our Learn to Swim programs. I highly recommend that every kid should know how to rescue themselves in the water and how to swim, and we have lots of openings for some of our swim programs, and so I encourage people to come on out for that.
Okay. What are the most popular programs? I mean, what are the ones that sells out in 2 minutes?
Usually the adventure camps. So the ones where the kids get to get in vans and go all kinds of cool places every day, like the water parks and things like that. And then I think it was actually the H2O camp, so the one that goes to a different water park every day. I believe that might have been the one that sold out in a few minutes. So,
all right. What about swim instructors and lifeguards? Do you have what you need?
We're doing pretty well on that. We are still hiring swim instructors. We could use a few lifeguards, summer camp counselors. I think last year about this time and the year before, we were a little short and kind of hitting the ground trying to find people, but we're doing much better. The number of people we have coming back working for us is really high this year. So that's been great.
All right. And what are the qualifications? I mean, what do you need? Do you have to have like CPR, first aid, those times?
We actually provide all of that training, especially for our new counselors. I believe you can come work for us as young as 14 or 15, I'm going to say 14, but it might be 15, as a kind of a junior camp counselor. Great first job, you know, come on out for the summer and help us out. And I know we could definitely use some of those kids right now.
Okay. All of that's online in terms of the jobs available?
It's on our website, basinrecreation.org. Also, we're going to be having a couple of full-time positions that are posted. I think one might already be posted for our open space technician. And then we also have our events and outreach coordinator position, I think is going to be posted this week. So if you're looking for a full-time job, Basin Recreation is a great place to work. We have great benefits and just an amazing staff.
All right. And then, again, lots of student jobs.
lots and lots of summer jobs. Keep yourself busy this summer and come on out and work for us.
Yeah, I read a public service announcement this morning that you are doing a first aid and CPR class. Interesting. So it's all done online, and then what? You go and make sure that people know how to do the pumps and the...
Yeah, you know, years ago, it was, you know, you had to be in person for all of it. But now all the book work is done online. And then you just come in, because we do have to actually, you have to be able to touch the mannequins or, to get a feel for that. So there is the skills portion is done in person and you're checked off for that and the testing. But the online, all the book reading and all that kind of stuff is done before the class.
Okay. Let me see. What's the latest with the e-bike survey?
Well, I think our contractor that was doing the survey for us, and for listeners that haven't been following it, Park City Municipal and Basin Recreation have partnered to do an e-bike survey for the for Park City and for the basin, for Snyderville Basin. And so we did hire a contractor for that. They did do a statistically valid survey of, it was sent to all residents in those two areas. And then they also did an open survey. And I think that our contractor was shocked at the number of responses that we had. I believe we had over 2,000 responses between the two surveys, which is, it's huge. It's a huge number of folks. So it just goes to show when it's something people care about, they're gonna get out there, and even when it takes them a few minutes to take the survey, they're gonna take it. So the contractor is putting all that data together. The survey did close at the end of March, and so they've been getting that data together. They are going to be doing a presentation of the data to the Park City Council at the City Council meeting on May 2nd. The time hasn't been formalized yet, but if the public's interested in coming to hear that and maybe making any comments on that, will be May 2nd, and keep an eye on that. And then they'll be doing a abbreviated version of that for the Basin Recreation Board at our May board meeting. Most of our board will probably be sitting in on the City Council meeting too to hear the in-person presentation. And then that will leave us, you know, the month of May and into the beginning of June to kind of figure out, are we going to do anything different? For Basin, for the Snyderville Basin and Basin Recreation Trails, we would need to do, to write an ordinance. I get that word wrong. And so we have already been talking to County Council. Dave Thomas is going to be helping us with that if we're going to be writing an ordinance. So that would allow us to be able to enforce it, and the Sheriff's Department to be able to enforce it if we needed to. And that will probably come in June at the June board meeting for Basin, and that would allow us to get something in place before the summer hits.
All right. So any sense which way the responses are leaning here?
You know, it's interesting. They did give us some preliminary data, and the part I found was interesting is, even though we think about, you know, this area and all our trails as being, you know, mountain bike and, you know, great for mountain bikes, the highest percentage of usage, when one of the questions was, you know, which of these things do you do on the trails? And there's a list, and the highest percentage was walking and hiking. So I thought that was interesting. So we need to make sure we are focusing on and making sure that those folks, the hikers, get, you know, are able to have a good experience. But otherwise, we're a lot of the data they're still compiling, and we're taking a look at it.
All right, and this was open to anybody who had a smartphone that they could just click on the link there at the trailheads. Will that be considered, though? I mean, if you've got folks from Salt Lake, not taxpayers, I mean, do you kind of have to throw them up or throw them out or, kind of look at them separately in terms of what they want? I mean, since they're not paying the bills?
That is a good question. And the survey was done in kind of two sections. The first one was sent to all the residents. So that survey is probably going to be the one that we'll be leaning more heavily on. And I believe there was about 1,000 responses to that one. So we'll be taking a look at it. And we can also break it down. It's really interesting. They can break it down by zip code. They can break it down by age. So we can really see, you know, where the people are coming from. The majority came from Park City, City Limits, and Snyderville Basin. And we can really look at that. Even the open link survey, the one you're talking about that they could click on at the trailheads, a lot of those were mostly local folks taking it. But they can break it down by zip codes, and we can see, you know, what kind of answers we're getting. I kind of have a feeling it's going to be pretty well across the board, the same kind of data from everyone, but it'll be interesting to see.
Okay. And finally, we wanted to make note that the Matt Noop field is getting replaced. What's happening there?
So that got pushed back a little bit, but they are mobilizing this morning. So they are actually out there this morning mobilizing that project. It shouldn't take more than a couple weeks to do that. I know we had some folks that were a little unhappy with our timing of it, but, you know, no matter when we did it, somebody was going to be unhappy. Some sport was going to be unhappy. But I want to remind the public that we do have two brand new turf fields over at Trailside East that weren't there 2 years ago. So we do still have, you know, the ability to have a turf field while Matinut Field is being replaced. And it was time to replace that turf. And we're going to be doing that over the next couple weeks.
All right. What do you do with all of that? Just goes right into the land dump, huh?
Yeah, we asked that question because I think maybe 2 months ago we had a listener that wanted to know if they could have some of it. So we asked that question, but it's not really feasible to be able to parse that out and figure that out.
Okay, so it does go into the dump or can it be recycled, you know?
You know, I'm not sure the answer to that.
Okay, let's see, anything else you want to mention?
No, just looking out the window. I think we got a little bit of snow-ish rain happening. So be patient. It's gonna take the trails a little bit longer to dry out than we had originally hoped.
Okay. All right. Thanks. Dana Jones is the Executive Director of the Snideville Basin Special Recreation District. Park City Planning Commission is reviewing Deer Valley's plan to build a new six-pack bubble chairlift on Park Peak. KPCW's Parker Malatesta reports some questioned if the resort's project would harm our local wildlife.
The proposed lift is around 9,000 feet in elevation in a project area identified as a crucial wildlife habitat by the Utah Department of Natural Resources. The DNR says several species, including moose, Rocky Mountain elk, and mule deer, make their home there. The lift, about a half mile in length, would connect the existing Ontario and Trump runs southeast to Park Peak, where Deer Valley wants to build a new lodge and gondola connection. It's part of the resort's major expansion into Wasatch County. Park City resident Jennifer Prechtel, who has worked in wildlife conservation, said the Planning Commission should deny the resort a building permit because of the existing habitat.
What this means is that there are no alternative habitats in the area for these species to go. Development can never be undone, and as a direct consequence, these animals will disappear from Park City forever. You know, at what expense are we going to continue developing?
A Deer Valley spokesperson told KPCW animals will be able to move and migrate through the area since there are no ground barriers and the resort is committed to being a responsible steward of the mountain. The Planning Commission will tour the project area Monday at 2 p.m. The site visit is open to the public and will involve skiing. The meetup will be on the west side of Sterling Lift in Silver Lake. The commission is scheduled to vote on the lift application at its meeting April 24th. Parker Malatesta, KPCW News.
Well, hundreds gathered at Park City Mountain on Saturday for the third annual Pond Skim. KPCW's Grace Dorfler has more on that.
Pirates, cowboys, and superheroes were among the 150 competitors who hit the slopes Saturday afternoon for Pond Skim at the base of Park City Mountain's Eagle Lift. Under warm, sunny skies, costumed skiers and snowboarders did their best to make it all the way across a pond at the bottom, or else punctuate their run with a spectacular splash. Skier Matt Raymond, wearing a Travis Kelce jersey, said before the competition he was there to defend his title. He won Best Skim last year. This year, he brought Megan and Andrew Voigt along for the ride, dressed as Taylor Swift and Patrick Mahomes. The trio said they hoped the themed costumes would be a hit with the crowd.
You don't know a pond skim is on your bucket list until you, like, see someone do it and realize, like, it's a party on skis.
Local news references showed up among the costumes, too. Two skiers showed up dressed as Sasha and Mocha, two Bernese mountain dogs made famous by their role in a local lawsuit. And local skier Shay Blackley dressed up as a miner to support Friends of Ski Mountain Mining History efforts to save the Silver King Mine at the bottom of the Bonanza Lift.
It's in a state of disrepair, and every year a little bit more collapses. If we let these buildings collapse, the history is lost.
Blackley says pond skimming is a fabulous experience.
It's like the heaviest powder ever. You gotta lean back, you gotta keep speed up, don't turn. You're not gonna use your edges in that water.
But while some focused on making it across, others targeted the prize for biggest splash, drenching the pondside judges. The day's prizes went to Kurt Almond for best skim, Tom Buffino for best costume, and Molly Wick for best splash. There's one more week to get in some spring turns. Deer Valley closes for the season Sunday, April 21st, and Park City Mountain's last day is April 22nd. Grace Dorfler, KPCW News.